Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1030, Irvine, California, November 15, 16. I will be there doing two shows each night. And then in December, clicking ahead, December 12, 13, 14, Tacoma, Washington, at the Tacoma Comedy Club. Go to, you can just Google either of those, Irvine Improv or Tacoma Comedy Club, or you can just go to id10t.com/tour. Where we have a fun Jetsons shirt now, which may be inspired by a fun interdimensional grandfather and grandson jumping around the multiverse show. So go there and look at stuff. Also sign up for the email list. All right, great. If you have a thing you want to promote, you can email us at events@id10t.com like Megan, who writes, I'm writing to invite your listeners in the Los Angeles area to the ECF Art Center's Fall Open House and Art Sale on Saturday, November 9th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Downtown Los Angeles Art Center at 431 South Broadway. The ECF Art Centers are a nonprofit organization providing adults with developmental disabilities a place to explore their creativity and freedom of expression. Join us for our Fall Open House and Art Sale, which includes still life drawing sessions and incredible installations through the Gallery and Art Center. Many of the artists working in the studios at ECF create comics, zines, and illustrations that are sure to appeal to any street art and gaming enthusiasts. For more information, please visit the website artecf.org. Thank you, Megan. Again, events@id10t.com. This episode is Lake Bell, who is promoting season 2 of Bless This Mess, the ABC show. Episodes are Tuesdays at 8:30, and they're also at abc.com. Lake is a powerhouse of comedic and creative brilliance. And if you have any pull to get involved in a creative endeavor, I think you'll enjoy this, extra enjoy this podcast, and also just enjoy Lake Bell as a human being, because there's just a lot of really great stuff in here about embracing who you are, playing to your strengths, finding out the kinds of things that you're passionate about, all those just those unique things that make you and help you establish your voice, and then also just kind of going out there and making it happen. So Lake is not only hilarious, but also incredibly inspirational as a creator. So I was really glad to sit down and talk with her. We have a lot of the same mutual friends, and we've been in a lot of the same things, and we've actually never like had a full conversation. So now I'm happy to say that we've become friends after this podcast, and I'm so glad that we did. This is the ID10T podcast number 1030 with Lake Bell.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
I have to credit Lydia's wallpaper and curtain game is insane.
Well, also the fixtures, we have to, I mean, that chandelier or whatever is.
The fixtures, I did pick out the fixtures.
They're great.
But, and the logs.
Look
and
at
everything.
This. It's very classy.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. Yeah, it's a fun, it's just fun. It's, because I feel like what.
Yeah, but not everybody takes the time and effort to kind of make their environments.
You know what it is, like, Belle? I think it's that what we do is very hard to. The when you're a performer, it's very hard to see tangible results. And so we're always looking to, like, am I working? Are people showing up to my shows? Am I getting off? Like, we have all these weird metrics to determine whether or not we're doing the thing that we.
Successful, yeah.
And the great thing about restoration, or at least, you know, very design, good. Is that. You can, like, live in the thing, and you go, this is it! I made it! And
oh, yeah.
This is a physical,
I love it,
representation of what I did.
I mean, are we recording?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, because I was going to say, I sort of deeply relate to that, and I've always, you know, I grew up with my mom, and my mom's an interior decorator, but she's like a classicist, you know, and my
stepbrother, who I grew up with since I was like two, is literally like a, he's one of the few classical architects in the country. I mean, he travels and does, you know, he's like a master of it. You know, he does some of the most remarkable work, and the attention to detail and kind of obsession and kind of peace that I find in aesthetic is a huge part of why it was imperative that I like become a director, because yeah. it was, you know, composition and texture and all of that gives me great peace. And I used to feel kind of guilty that, you know, it was, or not guilty, but I sort of judged myself for needing thing, you know, the visuals of a room that I inhabit to be a certain way. And, you know, people are like, oh, you're a control freak. I'm like, I actually find, and my mom and I talked about it, and I was like, she was like, no. You know, there's great peace in expressing yourself. She's like, it's an art form to kind of put together a room or an environment. It's mm-hmm. like, it's a storied environment, yeah. right? Like, and that, and I was like, oh, yes, that's what it is. It's like, if you're directing something and you have a frame and you can kind of populate that frame, that increment of space with a story, like that was deeply appealing to me.
Sure, and, but director is also like 20 jobs, and which is yes. so overwhelming to me because, you know, if we're going with this analogy of interior design and restoration, I feel like a director is not only the architect, but also the contractor. Like, you have to totally. Pick out the subcontractors yes. of, like, lighting and editing and
it's DP. True.
And so you have to design and also do all of the...
Well,
the...
and also find emotionality and like, the texture.
And then there's
of,
all that
yeah,
stuff
yeah,
too.
Yeah, the tone and the sort of... But I am inherently, like, a multitasker, and I think... I would be very bored to only do the visuals, right? So,
sure.
So it's like, it is the visuals, in, I mean, not to sound like uber pretentious, but it's really true that like the visuals is a mood, right? Which is emotional, you know? And so that informs like what you see in the space and how you feel in the space as an actor is like, ooh, like even when you put on your wardrobe for the first right. time for a character, you right. go, ooh, okay, I kind of know who this person is,
sure.
you know? It's like putting on the kind of... visual sort of cloaks of who this person is, who this whole world, what this world is going to be. And that, you know, especially it starts with the words. It starts with how you sort of build kind of even just the prose of the general kind of description of the room. And then what that translates to is like, I really love that kind of multifaceted, intricate kind of layered 4D way of expressing.
That's a good way to put it. It's yeah. sort of 4D. It, but also the idea that you, because you've directed yourself as an mm-hmm. actor too, which to me is, seems like, how are you able to, you know, like remove all of the big picture stuff in your head where the director brain and just focus on the moment, the performer brain, without judging the right. two and getting in the way of each other.
Well, I think that there is a squeamishness that some people feel that, oh, God, I can't see myself do acting, you know, mm-hmm. and I don't have that thing. So I noticed, I was like, why is it that people find that so weird? And I go, oh, okay. So when I look at myself, I can kind of look, when I look at playback, usually I can feel it whether I'm connected or not, but if I look at playback and I see the take, I go, oh, she's phoning it in. I mm-hmm. always refer to myself in the third person. And like, it gets very, I think it's very annoying for people initially to hear me refer to myself as she or the character. But I think I've gotten so used to it. I just kind of like, that's how I compartmentalize it. And I just, you know, when I'm editing myself, I'm kind of like, you know, she had a better take like three takes ago. What was that? Can we pull that up? Because she, see that? Yeah, see that? I feel like I don't believe her there. And now I believe, you know, it's like, it's helpful for me to kind of take a step back and just kind of be a little bit more objective.
Yeah.
And then objectively
definitely.
Also commending myself for the right thing. Right. Right. Sort of going, oh, that worked. You know, I can say that worked and without feeling like I'm fanning myself. It's literally like that worked or that didn't.
Yeah.
You know, that's not like an emotion. That's just like that's instinctually I can just see it. You know what I mean? So
I do. It's a very, not only is it it's sort of a protective thing for yourself, but it also is very efficient because
very efficient.
When you're, if you're able to see yourself as a third person, like you said, you're not internalizing all of that, like, oh, I didn't do a good take. Oh no, now I feel bad. As opposed to like,
to wallow in it. Yeah. Right. I hear what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, she really dropped the ball. Okay, that's fine. Well, we'll use this take of her.
Totally, like, we have it.
That completely makes sense. Right. And I've never heard that point of view before, because most people, I feel like, don't. You know, performers don't direct themselves. Even like, you know, when Jordan Peele started directing, I was like, oh, would you direct yourself? He was like, no, I don't think so. You know, because it just, the idea of being in it that much is feels like a lot.
I feel like it is a lot. And I feel like I really choose my moments when I do it, because it takes so much. I mean, I'll like cry at the end of a day. I'll be like badass motherfucker all throughout the day. And then I'll come home and I'll cry. You know what I mean? Because I got to release somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's like, I admit that pretty openly, because it's more just like overwhelming. You know, I so work on like overdrive. I'm just like, you know, because I was firing on so many cylinders, managing personalities as well as, you know, keeping track of, you know, the story I want to tell or how I want to tell it and visually how I want to express it. So it's just like, it's overwhelming. And
oh my
so I
God.
Would choose, I choose my moments, you know. But that said, sometimes I think I just think it's easier to cast myself in something that is really, that I'm really right for.
Sure.
Because I would never cast myself that I'm not right for it.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I think it's like, well, it's easier for me to just put myself in it because I know how to fucking do that. You know, it's like, that's going to be easy. I can talk to the actor, right, you know, the lead actor, and just tell her what to do, aka me. And it sounds like very schizophrenic. But the point is, it's just like, again, it comes back to efficiency. I'm like,
right.
It's just efficient if I play it
because right,
it'll make
right.
it easier.
Yeah, but also, but having that sort of, you know, realistic knowing, like,
yeah.
I know that I'm right for this. I mean.
Totally. If I wasn't right for it, I'd be like, I, as a director, I don't want me in it because it would be a pain in the ass. I
right.
wouldn't be getting it right.
Well, that's just having a healthy perspective, like having a healthy understanding about yourself. But you sort of, you said it really quickly, but I do want to point out that it's no small task. The managing of personalities
yeah.
is a whole other layer to that cake, where it's like, because everyone has their own vernacular and their own way that they need to be talked to and their own
yeah.
vocabulary and sort of figuring that out.
I feel like that I really learned from like, yeah, I'm a child of divorce. And like, I have, you know, managed personalities and, I have a big family of all different, you know, there's haves and steps and, you know, remarriages and marriages, you know, and then like your step parents' family, you know,
sure.
it just keeps going. And I feel like I've just been like, I've a little people pleasy as a kid, as we
sure.
all kind of have
sure.
in this industry. And I feel like there's been a lot of like, reading a room, like, so people don't get mad, you know. And if you can see me, you can't see me, but I'm doing a lot of like
yeah.
weird arm movements to kind
sort
of read
like
the
cut
room
through.
Yeah,
the, yeah. Children of Divorce are real good at reading rooms.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, feel it. Feel, okay, no
yeah.
joke right now. No joke right. Up, oh, time for a joke.
Yep.
Here we go.
Gonna break
inject
up the tension.
Yeah, break it up.
A little
yeah.
comedy bomb. Oh, everyone's
yeah.
laughing now. Okay,
and
everything's
oh,
good.
Not appropriate. No. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good. I feel that too. I'm going to respectfully bow down.
You passed
yeah.
the test. That was me
yeah.
testing the room, and you passed.
And
you're right.
You passed.
That was inappropriate.
Yes.
Good for you.
Good. And,
good.
And
now
I,
we can get back to work.
Yeah, I feel like that has, and even that, like the human condition in those different environments, I find really interesting too.
Sure.
Which as a writer, as you know, it's like, that's really cool. Like
yes.
all the awkwardness and all the kind of like sweaty, cringy, like people not saying things that it was so obvious what they're saying and yet no words have been said.
Right.
Like all of that stuff, I find, I'm like getting goosebumps because I get so excited about, you know, humans
yeah.
in their own sort of environments and ecosystems in which, you know, there's so much comedy and drama to be had. So I don't know. I love what we do. I think it's really cool. And I feel, so I especially just doing this TV show, we talk about personalities and, you know, being an executive producer, you have even more personalities to deal with. I've never worked for a studio, for instance. Now I work for a studio and a network.
Right.
And I have my whole ecosystem on set. So so it's like now there's like a new – there's even a new slew.
Oh, I welcome this new group of notes yes. coming in.
Notes and there's – you know, everybody are – everybody's people, you know.
Like, oh, yes. I do think my character would wear these shoes, but thank you for asking that very important question.
But I mean shoes, schmooze. I mean we got to talk – like we're talking – like, you know, that gets down to the nitty gritty. And then it's just like, I feel like when you're answering to so many people, there is almost a sense of like, well, I know this is, I knew going into making a show for a network, but like, this is not one of my indie movies. You know, this is not like an indie film where I wrote and directed it and produced it and star it and I get to make every decision, you know. Like, I know that. So I was like curious and also challenged and like wanted to know what this whole network
sure.
studio stuff is. Like,
yeah.
I was like, well, I feel like I can do that, you know. And why don't I would love to bring the little like funnies and the tone of the funnies that I do to like a big broad audience.
Yeah.
And see if that could work. Because I always felt like with my movies, yes, people would be like, you know, there would be a select group of people who would be like, oh, I really like your movie. And I saw it at this art house, you know, film.
Right.
You know, cinema. And I'd be like, and I love that. And I always crave to kind of bring good vibes because I do feel like I always try to inject some just good vibes, kind spirit, you know, good being good to others without being saccharine, you know, in your comedy and in the tone. That I wanted to bring to a broader audience, especially now because we're in such a divisive state. You know, I was like, that's the least I can do, I hope.
Well, I do think, I mean, yes, I agree that infusing positivity into a culture that is addicted to outrage and toxicity is, but I will say this, I do think that a lot of the toxicity is manufactured. I do believe that there are horrible things. Yes, of course there are horrible things going on in the world, but I just think that the proximity that people have, like if social media is like right up against their nose and their news cycles are right up against their nose, they will think 100% of the world is a horrible place.
Sure.
Because
sure.
that is what creates engagement. That is what sells. That is what the algorithms pick up to, you know, get people involved so that they can sell banner ads. But at the same time, I do think it's important to take a step back and realize that is not the full scope of the world.
It's not the full scope. I mean, I do feel that you know, there is a lot of darkness in the world, and it's always been there. And I think that in the same way that there is vast amounts of light and goodness in people, and I think people are born good, you know, I just feel like, you know, I have kids and obviously I have a family and you know, the darkness is just a little bit more aggressive when you become a mom or a dad, you know, it's
to
like,
protect them. You want to protect
them. Yeah, you just get ferocious about how can I, goddamn, how can I help? You know, what can I do? I have no superpower, you know, and I remember being like, oh, this is stupid. Comedy. why is this helping anything? You know? And then I started to like, meditate on it. And I was like, well, if the smallest thing that I could do is just like when I see something that makes me laugh or makes me feel good, you know, the way that I take steps into my the mundane things of life, like driving through traffic or picking up a cup of coffee or going to the grocery store, I do feel different than if I have listened to the news or watched something very dark or listened to some sort of like crime, you know, like the way that I walk through life is different in that moment. So if I could just create something that in general, the breath of it, you feel good after, you know,
right.
Like the what resonates with you is just like, ah, I feel like I have a smile in my fucking like aura or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I know it sounds very woo-woo, but I do think that's actually powerful because then if like somebody cuts you off in traffic, you know, And the little thing that I did was they just watched like an episode of Bless This Mess, or I Do Until I Don't, or whatever, something sweet and hopeful. Then maybe they won't be like, fuck you, man. Fuck you, fuck a piece of shit. You know? And like that thing, because sometimes I see that and I'm like, what do you do? Like, what are you doing? And I'm like, they must have not watched the last
episode. They didn't watch the last episode, which is coming out September 24th, the new one. To cure all your road rage.
Exactly, exactly. So it's like, oh, Tuesday nights, you know, 8:30 at ABC or
so
Hulu.
Wednesday mornings, you're going to have great traffic karma. But I, you know, but I don't, but I don't, I think we as performers, like, especially as comedy performers, do tend to downplay, like, ah, whatever, you know, we're clowns.
I know.
But I will say this. I think the perception, I think the sort of the wide perception by the country of performers is probably like, especially if you watch award shows, is that all performers think we're curing all sorts of diseases. And that we're real high on what we do. But to me, where I think it really pays off, it's like, no, we're not curing diseases. But you know what we do as performers is that if on Tuesday nights, if parents and their kids get together they watch a thing together and they have a moment and they laugh together, or they're relating to one another in real life and forgetting about the toxic news cycles or forgetting about whatever shitty things happened in that day, that has tremendous value. I'm sure people have said to you, or, you know, any of the myriad of performers that we know, you know, I was having a really bad day. I listened to you on a podcast. I watched your show. I heard this comedy thing you did. And it really helped. Like, and we also do that too.
I do. Oh my God.
Of course. So it does have value in that way.
Oh, 1,000%. Like, I admit, I mean, it's so funny because we're basically going straight. We're taking a train straight to laughter is the best medicine.
when actually medicine is the best medicine, but laughter is
medicine
good.
Medicine is very medicine good.
Medicine is
generally,
if you're in a hospital, request medicine.
Call, go to a doctor.
Not
call 911.
Don't see a clown if you're Lynn.
Yes, please, for the love of God. But I do think, for me personally, I you know, have felt really dark, and then I'll just like, you know, put on my favorite comedy album or something like that, you know, and I'll just listen to it again. It's 100% like necessary. Sometimes I come home and if I've had a really stressful day at work, and I will listen to like a great comedy album or something like that, and I'll laugh really hard. Or if I laughed really hard at work, like I cut up, like I lost it, you know, because it's very rare that I really will like lose it, because it's like I'm the producer, you know what I'm saying? I got to get shit done and I got to make my day. But like sometimes we, you know, you squeal out of control and you cannot, you have to think of dark shit. You're like, don't, oh my God, I'm ruining these takes. And when that happens, I always drive home and I go, I feel like I worked out. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I a little healthier. Like, I'll probably, it was like, if you really laugh, like, you know, the kind that you can't even control, like that, I feel like I always, it's almost like having ashwagandha or something. You know what I mean?
Well,
like,
but usually those moments where you laugh, where your stomach hurts so much, a lot of times those are times when you should not be laughing.
Of course.
Where you're supposed to be quiet, you're
the
at a presentation, you're at a family thing. You know, God forbid you're at a funeral something just gets in you because you're so stressed.
Ugh.
And it's just that defense mechanism, and you just start giggling and you go, my God, am I a bad person? It's like, no, your body's trying to process and deal. Like, you're trying to, this is your body trying to protect itself, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I just always, I feel like, oh, this is good. I like added years to my life because of this laugh, you know? It's like, but yeah. So anyway, I think it is the best medicine. fucking A.
Well, it is a good medicine.
No, it's just very, it's a nice supplement.
It is a supplement. It's a vitamin supplement to actual medicine.
Correct.
Laughing is good. Laughing is healthy. But
go
also,
to a doctor.
Yeah. But if you have a problem.
Yeah, please.
By all means, go to a doctor. I think you would probably, you might enjoy, do you watch any, it's not really a horror movie, but do you watch any horror stuff at all? Or is
I'm terrified, because especially since having kids. I already couldn't watch horror, and then I had kids, and I was like, I cannot do it.
Well, I have a movie that you might enjoy that is not, it's technically not horror, but it's a Japanese film called One Cut of the Dead.
Okay.
And I don't want to tell you too much about it, because it will spoil, but my wife and I watched this movie the other night, and it's probably my favorite movie of the year so far. And as a director, I think you will enjoy it, but I will caution you that the first 30 minutes of the movie, which, by the way, is all in one shot.
Beautiful.
You're going to go, what's going on?
Okay.
I don't know what this is.
Okay, but I'm on this journey.
I'm on this journey, and just stick with it, and then it will reveal itself to you along the way. As a director, I think you will enjoy it.
Okay, you have to, after this, you'd write it down for me.
I will write it down for you, but it is technically a Japanese zombie film.
Okay.
Technically.
That's okay, because my husband really likes it. He'll dabble in a zombie escape, so I will...
But it is fun.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's all I'm going to tell you about it.
I'm in.
I think you will
riveted.
Enjoy it. I will write it
Are
down.
Are we plugging this film?
I guess in a way we just plugged the film.
Great.
We plugged in the way that we saw it, and I just want people to see it because it was such an enjoyable... Because it's so hard. I mean, that's the other thing, too, with comedy is that it is, you know, it's... So I was talking to a magician friend of mine, and I was like, so there's only a finite number of tricks, really? And he goes, yeah, but it's all in the presentation. And with comedy, too, it is, like, comedy is sleight of hand
and turns.
And it's once you see the trick, you know, it's why you can listen to a song 100 million times, but you can't hear the same joke over and over.
Yeah, I mean, but there's all, like, I mean, it's same with story and writing. It's like there are, you know, a handful of, like, iconic story tropes that, you know, we dress in different ways. And it's just based on the human condition and proclivities to certain things that we're used to, you know, that are just historical, you know. So it's like, of course, there are... you know, repeats there, right? Like, or at least like the skeleton of a joke.
Sure.
Is not dissimilar from what you've heard, but it's the nature and the tone of the person who's bringing, you know, it's your own experience that is.
Well, that's why it's fun to watch like old comedy, like really old, you know, Marx Brothers or old Steve Allen shows or whatever. And you go, oh my God.
That might be the first time.
Jokes. Yeah, that might be the first time someone recorded it. But really, a lot of core jokes are kind of from the same place. And I just didn't know that when I heard my first, you know, whatever, Steve Martin album or whatever, because I wasn't really that familiar with anything before that.
Yeah, and then there's like, I love...
Although he was pretty unique.
No, I was going to say like alt, you know, and then it's like the alt comedians, you know, where it's about delivery or it's a bit, you know, it's like less about what they're saying and it's more how or whatever.
Right.
You know, it's like taking classic jokes and, you know, just telling stories, but in such a way... that the payout is so much more profound because of how they said it. Like, if somebody else said it, wouldn't be as funny.
Right.
You know, there's some jokes that are just, like, on their own, no matter who's going to say them, they're pretty solid. You know, it's, like, scientifically structured to be the joke versus, like... Because I always think of, like, Tig Notaro, like, who's my friend, really good friend, and she wows me with how... Her stories are incredible, but it's also real, like... Not everybody can tell that story. It's her
delivery and her persona.
Yeah.
And her...
The pauses in which she sort of...
Her bit about introducing the Indigo Girls is one of my favorite things in comedy.
It's so good. And like, no one else can do that.
No one else can do that. Maria Bamford's the same way. It's like, no one else could do Maria's material. Like, Maria can do Maria's material.
And that's really...
Yes, exactly. Because those are... that's... art in its purest form. It's like the purest expression of who those people are. You know who they are. You know who they are, and you know that it's so unique that they have no competition with anyone else because they're so much themselves.
Yeah.
And as a performer, that's inspiring to watch because it's great to watch people become who they are and be the purest form of themselves on stage.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I think for comedy, we're in an amazing time, you
Absolutely.
Know? Yeah, it's like so, it's so unique and so kind of like edgy, you know? It's like, I'm excited to see, there was a guy that Dax just turned me on to. I'm so sorry, I'm not remembering his name. He's a musician, a one-man musician. He's kind of like, I loved Reggie Watts when he was like doing his thing, and I still adore him with all my heart, and I love seeing him on Corden all the time. But he's really unique and profound. And there's this other, dude who's been doing it. He's a one man show. He just played the Roxy. Mark Rebelette. Yeah. He basically has like his synthesizers and he has all of his accoutrement, his musical accoutrement. And he makes beautiful music, but then he'll like sing about, he'll just be like, butthole, you know, like he'll sing about something very lewd and pervy, but like in a wonderful way. And it's so fun.
you could look up, like, Look at That Ass. That's one of his songs. So anyway, he's like delightfully pervy and super unique.
Well,
and
that's the thing, is that there's so, you know, the old days of comedy, there were basically like 8 super comics, you know? And it's like you're going to find, you have to kind of decide which one of these handful of people, this pantheon, that you're going to go towards. And I liked all of it.
Oh, me too.
Rich Pryor, Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy.
Hell yeah.
Kinnison, Seinfeld, yeah. Judy Tenuta, Emo, Phillips. Like I liked everyone. Now, there's so much variety and so many platforms. Like, what type of comedy, you know? Like,
that's really exciting, too, is, like, initially, I think I was really intimidated by, you know, I'm classically trained. I went to drama school in England, and I studied, you know, to become an actor, you know, and, like, I felt my mom had told me that's what you do in order to be an actor. Like, and I just sort of believed her because she's my mom. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it seems like it worked, by the way.
And it worked. Yeah. But I'm just saying that I came up working. I did years of conservatory training and I wanted to be in Hollywood doing fun stuff, you know? And so I spent 18, 19, 20, 21, all just training. And that sounds real cool. But the point is like a lot of, you know, my other people who were very successful also started and like got to just come out and, you know, use the work as a training. And
sure.
I think that is honorable as well. And then even more so. But at the time when I was younger, I think like when I started to kind of like try to get jobs and then I would lose them to someone who had a YouTube channel or something.
Right.
You know, when that first happened, my heart hurt a little bit where I was like, hey, wait a minute. You know what I mean?
I put in the time.
Yeah. And then I realized, especially as a director and as a producer, I was like starting to love some of these people that I was finding literally on Instagram, YouTube. Like I was now commending these incredibly innovative and wonderfully ambitious people that knew that they had talent, didn't have any other way to kind of showcase themselves, and then did, and alas, did it like sort of in a compelling way.
Absolutely.
And then I was like, this is great.
Well, sure, because in the older days, you had to fit into a pre-existing structure or hope that someone could see you in a pre-existing structure.
Yeah, there was a system,
too. And now every person can kind of create that structure and find a direct connection to their audience for whatever unique thing that they do. And that's magical. It is also scary at the same time because when you're like, oh my God, there's so many performers. How do I?
Sure.
But then that just is.
But the, you
that's
will
just
get
your responsibility to be innovative. Yeah.
It is. And I think everyone is unique, whether you like it or not. So it's like,
no, like
if you try to be other people, you know, that's the thing is like, if you put yourself out there and you're trying to be somebody else, like you do what somebody else is doing, that doesn't work. But if you're deeply original, you will get noticed. I just feel like originality and uniqueness gets rewarded if it's committed and earnest and like raw, you know? So there are people who are doing characters and it's like, you know, there's nowhere to hide kind of, they're just like right there in your face and they're kind of putting themselves out there. And that's, I find that really compelling. But you know, I came up in a time where it was like, and also I was in a country, I should say, in England, you know, there is literally, there is very direct rules, at least there was when coming up. Like, you know, I was 18 and my mom said, you go to England to study. And I went and I auditioned for drama schools and I, you know, I was told and educated very quickly that in England how it works is no one's getting hired unless you've gone to drama school.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get an audition. You can't get an agent to look at you unless you've gone to drama school.
Right.
So you go to drama conservatory. You then have a showcase. And then an agent may or may not pick you up and also other theater reps and things like that come and see it.
Yep.
And then you get put into theater if you're lucky, you know. And if you get a rep, then you get, you know. But literally, you were – and in England, it was like – you, if you said that, oh, well, you know, I'm studying to be an actor, like, it wasn't like, fucking,
good luck,
you
bud.
Mean studying to be a waitress, you know? Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, in America, that's how it is. You know what I mean? It, there, it's like, oh, well, that's interesting. You know, my daughter's being a doctor. You know, it's like, it was like at the level of like doctor, lawyer, actor.
I don't know if you're aware, you drifted a little into Emma Thompson, and I really appreciated
oh,
it.
Super aware.
I really appreciated it.
Thank you. But no, I think that. That was really interesting and probably really helpful to grow up in, you know, and to come up in a town where it was respected. Like, sure. That was nice.
Right.
Because then it was like I came to L.A. right after that and it was kind of like, you know, a little like get your tits out. You know what I mean? It was kind of like.
I went to drama school. That's great.
Yeah. Put on a push-up bra. Literally. Right. It was. I remember there was like I would go when I first got here. I was told in England, and this is the audition training as they send you out into the world, like, you are to come in all black and no, like, makeup, you know, you're clean, open book. You're a canvas, right? Clean canvas. So when you go into any audition, especially theater, but this, so I, like, came to kind of, like, I don't know, I was, like, auditioning for, like, Felicity, you know, like, at the time. And I
am a blank canvas.
Yeah, I am a blank canvas. And I had a manager that was hip-pocketing me who was amazing, and she ended up being my manager for many years. And you know, she was, like, you know, they said, you know, I think there was a comment about my coming in and looking dour or something. And they didn't get it, and they were just kind of like, she's a pretty girl, but like, what's the deal with the light? Was she at a funeral? You know, and so, and I was like, no, I just, and I told her my theory on, you know, being a blank canvas, and she was like, oh, honey, she's like, this is Los Angeles. She's like, you have to walk in and look exactly like you're about to shoot it.
You gotta like, show up like a painted canvas.
Yeah, you're a painted canvas. She's like. You got to wear makeup. And I was like, what level? I was like mascara, you know, I was like, are we talking like, cause that's like, for me, like a hot, very high level. Sure. If there's mascara involved.
Sure.
And she was like, oh, mascara, lip gloss, push up bra, the whole thing. And I was like, but if I'm playing somebody who's like at a funeral, like there was one time I really was going in and I was mourning and I was crying and everything. And she's like, even if it's at a funeral, you have to look beautiful, like gorgeous, you know? And I was just like, oh, okay. So it was just funny. She's like, even if you're like a, you know, an addict and you're a victim and it's a thing, gorgeous. You had makeup and gorgeous and the whole thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, Jesus.
You may be passed out in an alley, but you still had time to put on rouge.
Dead, you're going to be gorgeous. And I was like, oh, God, all right.
Oh, my Jesus.
So I switched it up and, you know, I got a couple callbacks and, you know, it was just like, I did get a callback for Felicity, but I did not get the job.
God damn it.
I thought I thought I had made it. I was like, oh my God, can I have one of these?
Yeah, of course. You can have an icebreaker. Although I feel like we've already broken the ice. Good night, you guys. This
good night.
Great
that job. Was it. That was it. We're out. The credits.
But I do think that that was your path. And what's so exciting now is that there are infinite paths.
Yes.
And
totally.
Even just in the way that, not even in just a lot of different, you know, styles of comedy, but also platform-specific comedy. Like, you know, comedy on TikTok is totally different than comedy on Instagram, which is different than comedy on YouTube, which is different than longer form, you know?
Yeah.
And now even television experimenting, podcast. You know, in the last handful of years with podcasts or like 11-minute episode, you know? It's like there's no real rules anymore.
And I love that. I think that's why I was curious about network comedy. Because I was like, okay, I know there's a lot of rules there. And I've always found, even in independent film, you know, there are limitations. And I actually think limitations breed great creativity.
I 1,000% agree.
Yeah. And I think I'm not like afraid of them. I kind of welcome them. You know, I'm kind of like, all right, well, if we can't do X, Y, and Z, what about B, Q, and R? Mm-hmm. You know, and that is an exciting task, you know, to take on in any form, but certainly in this, you know, in this creative space. It's like with indie movies, it was always like, we don't have enough money, you know? and we can't do this, and we can't do this shot, or we can't get this, you know, rig, and, you know, it's just, it's usually that, or we don't have enough days, so we can't set up for that. But with my show, it's not, it's less about money, and it's more about, like, S&P, you know, standards and practices, or, which I'll never understand fully.
So Dax can't show his butthole in this episode.
I know why,
so saying,
though, but yeah, why?
This is a mess
America
we want
to
bless. I don't understand.
See,
everyone has a butthole. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, I will say there is a major, major issue. I don't know, like, not buttholes aside. I think, I really don't understand. I'm not going to, like, soapbox it too much, but I do feel like standards and practices in general are confusing on television, because everybody talks about this, but something's got to give a little bit. You've got all these TV shows that are showing extreme violence.
Oh, yeah.
They always talk about, like, you can almost, instead of seeing, I don't know who was just talking about this, but they were saying you can, like, you can't show a mouth on a boob, but you can show a boob getting chopped off, basically. Do you know what I'm saying? That, like,
you know what? That's exactly, you know, years ago, a friend of mine did visual effects for a procedural drama. And there was an episode where they had to, there was, like, a murdered lady on the floor. Like, super murdered.
Super,
like,
murdered.
You know, like, blood, basically just cut up, and they're like, can you just, like, blur out her nipple a little bit? It's like, she's dead on the, and, you know, it's like on Walking Dead all the time, you know, like, you can't say, you know, like, they can't swear, they can say shit.
Oh, that's dope.
But they can't, you
I wish
know,
I can say shit.
You know, zombie apocalypse, you'd be like, what the fuck is going on? You can't say fuck, but you can watch someone's guts being ripped out, you know what I mean? So it's like the, And
I think the gun thing, too. It's sort of like, you know, you got, look, whether you like it or, like, whatever your politics, like, you know, I just feel like clearly we've got an issue with violence in this country, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, to show guns being wielded by people in a kind of heroic or, like, glamorizing the badass.
But boobs are the enemy.
Yeah, but, yeah, it's like that. Seeing that over and over again.
It's ridiculous.
And just infused in all of our cultural, you know, our sort of, like, media ingestion is insane. And then just to show, like, sexual connection between two humans, like, that's the enemy. Like, I just don't get it.
I think it just boils down to,
I really want to know, I really want to understand why, though. Like, I don't, you know, when, like, we had an episode and I'm, like, in a bra or whatever, and it's, like, super chill bra, okay? And this is, like, you know, it's, like, they're looking at, first of all, they're a little pervy, okay? Because their notes come back, and they go frame by frame. They're noticing shit that, like, I am, like, y'all are fucked up over there. Like, what are you doing? But they're, like, nitpicking. They're stopping at every frame. And they're looking to see, as if someone's going to notice, like, an under boob or slight. I'm telling you guys, we're talking, like, very little. And
then that's where the devil gets in.
Yeah, that's where the devil gets in or something. And then it's, like, we have to pay for VFX to, like, cover the, I mean, it's really, like, extensive.
It really, I think, because, you know, network television is still overseen by the FCC. Cable is not.
But I don't understand. I am an intelligent person. I'm trying really hard to understand
why. This is what I have gleaned from the long and the short of it. And at cable television, they opt into an S&P for sponsors. But network television, because it is technically, like, broadcast.
Yes.
You know, over-the-air broadcast. The way that it works and the way why the rules seem confusing and unclear is because I think it's just, if the community complains, then it's taboo. And more people will complain about a side boob than a gun in this country.
Right.
And because it allows them to feel like they, you know, whatever sort of puritanical idea makes them feel like they're good people or have, like, oh, I'm gonna, you know. And so if people complain, that's where they have to go, okay. And more people complain about boobs than guns, I guess, in television.
But it is illegal to shoot someone. It is not illegal to be in a bra.
I 1,000% agree with you. That's just, I think it's just because they are bound by what the community will bear.
Right.
And that is what
society,
like, that's what society, yeah. Right. You know, like more people are going to complain about Janet Jackson's nipple than, right. you know, people, you know, being shot 100 times on television. Cause that is just, I don't know. That's my guess. Is that it's the amount of people that will complain about something and the FCC has to go, okay, you know, I guess we got to find these people. I mean, I don't know if that's...
There was something else. Like, they had... There was a figurative line drawing, kind of Matisse-esque, in the backdrop of... In the background of a... It was like a framed, you know, random art piece or something. In the back of a take that... They wanted us to VFX. Now, this is, it's a figurative nude that I cannot even, it's so small, I can't even see it. I don't know why I'm like bitching about this right now. Because I love my show and it's just, I'm just trying to, it's more me trying to
understand like why you'd have to blur a famous piece of art.
Or just, it's not even, it was just like so figurative. I was like, I don't even see dumb boobies in there. Like, I don't even.
That is job preservation. That is someone who, you know, listen, everyone, especially in this fast changing and evolving television landscape, which in the next 3 years is going to evolve and change so dramatically.
I think that's true. I think that
everyone's afraid of losing their job. So that person, and I'm just playing devil's advocate here, and I'm not saying I agree with it, but the person who says, let's blur that Matisse, in their mind, they're going, okay, look, I'm going to play the odds here. If I don't blur that and someone complains,
right.
And then the network comes back to me and go, how the fuck does this get through? And then that person isn't going to be able to save their job by saying, but it's art, you know, like they're afraid they're going to get fired.
And yet someone left a coffee cup in the Game of Thrones. I just, it's like, I'm just like, we got to get our S&P guys on the HBO checkers. Like, because our gals and guys over at S&P are hawks, okay? They are not going to miss anything.
Also, you know, it's of all networks, ABC is owned by Disney. It's probably the most family friendly of the, and so they're gonna always just take the most precautions of everything. And so I agree with you. I also do understand that a lot of it is just people being terrified of losing their jobs and trying to protect their jobs and go, okay, well, let's just do this so no one can say anything.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I will give them credit because I, here's what I'll say. The episode that's coming up tomorrow night is, I don't know when this is airing, but the point is that is about sex in a relationship and we, you know, there is like, you know, making out or whatever, and there's like some clothes coming off and stuff like that. And it's, you know, we're 8:30 slot. I just was happy that I kept being like, look, if we're going to talk about sex, they need, like, the married couple in this show needs to, like, look like they're married. About to So, you know, I'm grateful that we could at least tell that story because I was kind of concerned that it would be hard to do that. And so they did. I think the episode's great and super excruciatingly real for given that we don't actually like do it or anything, but it's like, there's a lot of really fun juice in there. Just about, you know, being in a relationship and then having the sex wane and like, what does that mean? And you know, all that stuff that we all kind of relate to, but it's like, I'm really proud of the writing in that.
Well, and I also think that, you know, those like people who watch, they know they can tell, even if they can't verbalize it, when something is authentic and something is lying to them, you know, or it's like, I'm not buying this. Like, even if it's like a subconscious dissonance that they're feeling, people know. And so, again, that's the task that you have now is how can I creatively infuse as much authenticity into this with these
parameters
that we have. And again, that's just the game of network television.
Yeah. And it's, I do find it to be kind of an interesting game to play. And I do think that there's a beautiful currency that I'm very grateful to have in reaching that many people to be able to, you know, have anyone, like families, like you said, like kids and then Grammys and everybody in between, like all watch the show and get something out of it, you know?
Yeah. And I think it's also good too, because listen, if it's difficult. It can be challenging for someone to say, I'm just going to only, you know, I'm just only going to work in indie, because at a certain point it can be, you know, because you're going to have to make enough each time.
I know.
And so if you're working on a higher profile thing, not only are you reaching more people, but it just creates a momentum that allows you to do more of the personal projects that you want to do because of the business. It's like, oh, people know Lake Bell. Let's throw money at this thing and let's let her do more of her thing because people like her. It just allows you more options and more freedom to keep doing the stuff that you want
to
do.
I concur. I mean, I think also just, it's been really inspiring. It's like you always say, you know, if you want to get anything done, ask a busy person. You know what I mean? And I feel like I'm already developing so many projects and, you know, other TV projects, but then, you know, for streaming, and then I have other things, you know, other features that I want to make that are all sort of percolating in different states of ready. And I feel like that, you know, it's like creativity also sort of inspires more, right?
So absolutely.
It's like more self-generating kind of opportunities kind of start to percolate.
Yeah, because then you evolve, and then I think the position that you're in, and I think it's important to recognize when you're in that position, is, you know, you go from the trying to build, and then at a certain point it tips, and then you become the person that has to decide which option to choose, which is a different skill set with a different set of pressures and stresses, because, gosh, you don't always know. And, you know, when you're young, you just think, I got to take everything to make it all. And then you get to a place where you're like, no, I can't take everything. I have to make
precious
smart choices.
Time, yeah.
And what are those choices? And what does get my energy? And that's a whole new set of challenges.
For sure. And I think, you know, that is where I am for sure. And I feel like also there's only so many hours of the day. Like, what do you want to do on your hiatus?
You know? You have kids.
Like, and I have kids. Yeah. And I want to see them. And I want to be a good mom. You know, I want to kick butt at that too, you know. And I just, you know, learning, I genuinely get a lot of sustenance of just like good comedy inspiration from them.
Yeah.
And I'm very like, I'm a gooey mom, you know. I might like, I do kick some butt when I'm at work, and I'm very like efficient and like, you know, kind of on the front foot. But at home, I'm very sort of like smushy, and I feel like that's an important part of my personality that I need to express. And so I think you know, especially when you do have kids, it's like you better love what you're fucking doing, and you better, you know, whatever choice I make, that they come into it as well. Also, it's like, I'm a family. My husband has, you know, like his projects and his life that he's sort of building as well. And so we have to make these decisions together. Like, I can't, when I was single or didn't have kids, I could be like, yeah, I'm going to go shoot a movie in Tunisia, you know, for a year, you know, whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, if I do that, I'm like, ooh, I can still do that, but I have to like clear it with four people.
Yeah. But then the flip side of that is, when you do have all that freedom, a lot of the time what you're thinking about is like, that'd be really great to just have someone that I love that loves me. But, you know, it's like, like that sort of, you know, because sometimes when people that I know that sort of feel like, oh, I don't know, I feel like I'm just, you know, claustrophobic. It's like, yeah, but when you had all the freedom in the world, you hated it.
Yeah.
You know, because you want, it feels good to be a part of something, and it feels good to have special people in your life that you care about, that care about you. And so that idea of like, I could just get a bug out bag, and I could just go fuck off to Canada for like six. And I'm like, yeah, but then you'd be miserable there, you know? Like, it doesn't.
Well, my husband totally loves having bug out bags and fucking off to go places. And he does. And he's done a 10-day trip in Alaska, but you build it with your team, and you make sure that everybody can do the things that they want to do in life.
Well, I think that's nice.
Yeah, there's like a happy medium, right? So like, if you have those things, then you can fucking want to just do a lot of things and do it. You just have to make sure that everybody's protected. And I just feel like I also have those feelings, and I would like to go and fucking, you know, go to Africa. I want to go to Japan. There's a lot of things I want to do. But now my thing is, okay, how do I build an opportunity to make that happen so I can bring my family?
Yeah. You know? Which is great, because then that might
be a project that, you know, because you're working within those parameters,
yeah.
then again, that's sort of creative problem solving.
Yeah,
I know. Like, how do I multitask this and make it serve, you know, we can take the kit. By the way, you should go to Japan. It's fucking amazing.
Cannot wait.
We went there on our honeymoon, and it was
the best.
Yeah. It was really incredible.
I can't wait.
When you go, like, spend a few days in Tokyo, see Shibuya, see, like, all of the Tokyo stuff, go to the Tsukiji Fish Market, but then also just get out and see traditional gorgeous countryside Japan. You will eat a lot of fish faces. We ate so many fish faces.
Because
you have these several course meals and it's just the whole fish. And so we kind of got into this thing of like, okay, you got to eat the face. It's on there, you know.
Eat the face.
We don't have to, but it is part of it.
Like, if I'm there, listen, I am gonna jump in. I'm gonna
eat a lot of fish faces.
Eat a lot of fish faces, or whatever you got to do. I'm gonna just be very yes.
But I also think that you're an exceptional role model as someone who just kind of does whatever sounds fun to them.
Because
I didn't know this about you, but it said that I read that you write a column about automotive stuff. And that is just that's a perfect, like, she doesn't have to do this. It's clearly something that she just likes doing.
Yeah.
And that is the best type of life to build.
Yeah. And I did, to clarify, I did a car column called Test Drive for the Hollywood Reporter for like a year and a half or so. And, you know, that comes from a place of my dad is a race car enthusiast and racetrack owner. And so I grew up in and around that world. And I had, you know, I do have a lot of interest, you know, interior design, you know, in architecture. There are things that are just specific to me that I wanted to kind of, sort of investigate and express. And so the Hollywood Reporter at the time had gotten wind that I, you know, my dad did that and I grew up in that world and that I was an enthusiast. And so they offered that. And so I did like a comedic kind of more anecdotal, experiential kind of column about it. And it was great. I used to have like cars that were delivered to me for the week and then I could test drive them. So I'd be like, I looked like a badass. Like when my husband was dating, we were first dating and I was like, oh yeah, I just have this Maserati for the week. So I don't know. We could take my car, your car, whatever. It doesn't matter.
Or the Maserati.
Yeah. It's no big deal. It was fantastic. And then, And so I agree. I really want to, it's harder with kids, you know, to be like, hey, I just want to do this thing or whatever and follow those whims. But I think that is, and my husband's the same way. He really does follow whatever unique interests that even are not on brand. Like, particularly, what's on brand is to be off brand. You know what I mean?
That's what, you know, like, my wife gave me the best piece of sort of design philosophy, because I would get really locked into, like, well, you know, the house that we live in is Spanish, and so it should have this. And she goes, no, that's not how it works.
Yes.
You don't let the room, and you know, granted, we don't have a bunch of modern shit in our house. But she said, you pick what you like, and because you like it, that's how it all works together, and that's how all the pieces talk to each other.
But that's also, you have a natural sort of design sense, right? So it's like your eye is specific. And if you have a specific and original eye, even that you might pick something that's mid-century and you pick something that's like neoclassical or whatever, and then it just works, you know? But my mom would teach me the same thing, which is like, you don't have to be like, everything is, you know, East Lake, you know? And
right,
it's like,
right,
well,
right.
that would look boring, you know? And it would look like you're in on a set.
You throw the East Lake knobs on, you throw some hinges on, they're just
get
little...
Get a Biedermeier.
Just little detailing. Little details. So people go, oh, wow, that's a really intricate hinge.
Yeah, it's like, East Lake. I'm paying attention.
But but I think it does sort of encapsulate...
Like tramp art in there, a little like folk art with a little, like, more, you know, sort of modernism. I like it.
Yeah, but it sort of, I think it speaks to kind of the larger thing that we were talking about, is not only, you know, like YouTubers creating their own thing and not fitting into a system, but sort of like the becoming of Maria Bamford and the becoming of Tig, where you sort of, the more yourself you are,
yes,
and the more you know and express those things, those make you the unique creature that you are.
You will be awarded.
Exactly. And so that's why, again, what your husband's doing and what you're doing, it's like, yeah, I'll write about cars and then I'll do this and then I'm directing and then I did this network show, but I also like doing these intimate films.
Yeah.
It's like all of those things together make you the most unique thing that you are. And that, I think, is the takeaway for anyone who wants to be a creator. It's like, explore every facet of what you're into, and it might change, and you can try stuff for a while and then try different stuff later, and then unite all those disciplines to become, you know, like this sort of cross-platform creature.
Because I agree. I think people do get rigid and, well, this is kind of who I created. You know, it's like, this is my brand or this is my...
Yeah.
And by the way, people who are very... that's a choice, right? People who are like, this is who I am. And they like kind of focus in and zero in on like an image, you know, and a breadth of, you know... of work, you know, that can be also very, you know, fruitful.
Sure.
The commitment, the staunch and like fierce commitment to a very specific angle, you know? But it's not like, I don't know that I could ever be that. And I struggled with that a lot because I was like, shit, man, like a lot of the people that I admire, you know, were people very focused on a certain thing and tone or whatever it is, you know, so it is interesting. Like I think about like Miranda July. I think she's fantastic. I look up to her so much. I know her, but I also am just like, fuck it. I look up to her too, you know, and I find her from afar. I look at her the way that she puts herself together from just, you know, her daily kind of persona. What she curates to put out into the world is very specific. I mean, she's an artist. So, and then the movies she writes and directs and stars in are incredibly on her brand, in my opinion, and very focused and tonally thoughtful and disciplined in a way, you know. And so... But she's, you know, within the construct of her world and her sort of bubble, she is deeply sort of wild and kind of like, you know, free within that, in the spirit of who Miranda July is. So for her, I mean, I look up to her in that way, but I don't know that I am that, you know, it's like, and I've let myself, you know, it's okay. You know, yeah, it's like, yeah, I'm Lake, you know, I'm not her. But I can admire her in that way, you know, and I think even, you know, I think about Tig again, very, very sort of like she has a very specific way she, you know, sort of writes and performs and the kinds of things she chooses to do. You know, it's very,
but then you get excited about that when you go, I think I understand what her point of view is, and I'm excited to see how that evolves. Takes on. Yeah. These new topics or these other things.
Yeah, because, or mediums.
Yeah. Exactly. Sort of like that friend that you're excited to talk to about a movie or something because you just want to, you know that they're going to be funny when they talk about it and you just want to hear them apply that filter to that.
Yeah. And then it's like in the same breath, it's like as a filmmaker, you know, I think about like Martin Scorsese or something like that. It's like I always loved that he did King of Comedy, which is such a funny film. And it just was so unexpected in a way because he's such a badass motherfucking, like, you know, he's so good at, you know, sort of drama and violence and, like, you know, he's a master, you know. And yet him taking on comedy, which is so – this is like obviously an old movie, but I was really encouraged by that and inspired by that movie because I was like, oh, you can do it all. You don't have to say, well, I only do dramas. You know what I mean? And I feel like that is because I think Hollywood does that a lot. They're like, well, she only does X, right? Well, yes, she's a comedy girl now.
It's easier for them to put people in boxes because there's so many people just go, oh, this person does this, this person does that. But that's why the people who really pop, I think, get to constantly surprise you.
We're moving around.
And so, you know, as we're sort of winding this down, I would love to hear your take or your advice for people who are having an identity crisis or trying to figure out or feel stuck or feel like, well, I do like these couple things, but I don't really know, because you are definitely someone who has figured out how to manifest things in the real world. And that's a skill.
Well, I think that the there's something like, because I talk about this a lot with like people, you know, because I'm on the board of Women in Film and I talk to a lot of like mentors and people. And I do think that writing seems to be people's like freakiest thing. They're yeah. always like, oh my God, like I want to write, but like, how do you do it? And I'm like, oh, you gotta write. You know, it's like first things first, you so gotta
I just start?
You gotta show up. Yeah. And I think that people, especially in this day and age, and this is a little bit like the kids these days, but I'm just saying like you know, people almost are afraid of the simplicity of that answer, which is like, you do, like the way that people get things done is doing them. Mm-hmm. You can't talk about it and right. you can't look at other people doing it. You have to take it upon yourself to fail and sit down and show up at your computer, and you have to believe in yourself enough to excruciatingly fail or put things out there that, you know, it's like you got to do your first draft of yeah. anything. So nobody ever writes a first draft that's, you know, the final draft, you know?
I don't mean to interrupt, but I just want to interject into yeah. there that if for people who are like, well, yeah, but if I don't think I'm good enough to do it, then I would say, well, just do it anyway. Oh, do yeah. it in spite of the fact oh, that yeah. you feel
you
that
suck, way.
You
suck. It's not going to be good. Whatever. Yeah. But it's also like you – people also have to remember that they're everybody who's like fancy, fantastic writer or whatever or generator of anything – of content, of story, nobody just shows up with it. Yes, there are idea spikes that happen that are cyclical. And I think any creative kind of knows what I'm talking about, where it's like you have a little cycle of like, I have moments like where I got nothing. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And that could last for like months. But then it's like there's 1 week or even like 3 days where I'm just like, what the fuck did I eat? Like everything, I'm lying in bed. I can't help it. I got to write some shit down. You know, I'm in the shower. I'm peeing. I'm in the bath. I'm cooking lunch for my kid. I've got ideas galore, but only for those two days.
Yeah.
It's those 2 days. And they're all over the place. Literally, I feel like I have my slate of projects for like the next 10 years that all came from like 3 days, like back, like, I don't know, like 5 years ago, you know what I mean? And it's interesting. It's like when you have those moments, even though you're like, oh, this is funny, like listen to those moments. Mm. You have to like cherish them, like keep a notepad, keep your notes, the little notes thing on your phone, whatever it is, take little voice notes, anything. Keep write it down and take it seriously, because those little waves don't happen a lot and you got to listen to them. And then it's like, if you feel like, oh, I'm just like Fartville, USA, I got nothing, then don't worry about that either, because you just got to show up and look back on those notes when you did have something good and start to just like outline, just like, you know, just like outlines are awesome. You know, it's like just like stream of consciousness. I don't know. Here's a scene. This makes no sense. It's not the start of a movie. Well, it doesn't matter. It's a scene and it's interesting and it might lead somewhere. You know, it's like giving yourself credit to be a little messier.
Yes. And again, I think you're also talking about showing up consistently, because I think you have to show up consistently to get the machine working so that you have that 3 days. Because it's like you don't drop a seed in the ground and go, where's the fruit? You have to water it every day, and then it's boring for a long time.
So boring.
And then all of a sudden one day you're like, holy shit, lemons.
But this is also something I want to say for all the moms in the house and all the dads too, who are like working dads or like, you know, participatory and moms and all this stuff. If you don't have the time, because there's a lot of people who are like, well, I just don't have the time, mm-hmm. you know. You don't have to show up every day. You have to show up for – there has to be a block, though, together that has some consistency. So if that means you only have really 2 hours when the kid's napping, like that's really – instead of like doing laundry and building lunches or making bottles or whatever it is, if you give yourself just 2 hours a day consistently, that might be your schedule. Or it might be like, hey – family, I need 3 days. I'm going for a quote writer's retreat, mm-hmm. whatever it is. And that means you can go home at night and stuff and be home for bedtime or be there for mornings. But it just means you're going to your proverbial office mm-hmm. or like, you know, your office in the sky, if that means like it's a coffee shop or whatever. And you just show up for yourself and you don't even fucking – you do not even think about it until you get to that space that's the workspace. And you do like 3-day kind of writer's retreats, mm-hmm. you know, and you give yourself that opportunity, you know, to generate thought. And usually the first day is kind of bunk, but then the second and third day are kind of interesting. And yeah. Something comes of it.
Yeah. When you chip away at it a little bit at a time.
Yeah.
It does over time really add up in an yeah. incredible way. And lastly, I just would love to, you know, because there's just so much toxicity in the world, then we sort of open talking about positivity and comedy and like giving people a little bit of a harbor. Just a quick thing that you're joyful about, like what brings you joy? I mean, obviously your kids, is there, you know, anything.
Oh, that's so funny. I mean, I know it's so cliche. I mean, the kid thing is big though, because we can't just like roll over it. Cause then you are like, it's so hard having kids. It's so hard. I find it so hard. So I need to kind of give myself emotional cookies about it and remember all the good stuff, because, you know, it's like my kids really like fought, like they really fought out of the gate, you know, and it was just difficult. And so I'm finding a lot of joy in them coexisting very peacefully. I have to pray. I'm just like so grateful with every ounce of my soul and being for that. It is like joyous. And my son, who had a really rough start, like the two of them just kind of like enjoying each other. It's like, that's the investment that you kind mm-hmm. of like, you know, lean into. And at the first 2.5 years, my husband and I were like, we fucked up. This is a terrible idea. This is like not good. Seriously, like what have we done? And then, you know, it's finally we're seeing the light where just like so good to each other. So that, and then like super warm, sexy chocolate chip cookies mm-hmm. fresh out of the oven, which I've just experienced. And it's like, the joy, I'm literally salivating. The joy of that is really special, because I don't cheat a lot with my, I eat very well, and the just the beauty of like, I like very doughy, soft mm-hmm. chocolate chip cookies that are not like crunchy. Everyone's like, I like them crunchy. I'm like, fuck you. And yeah. like, just leave, you know.
It just hugs every crevice of your
mouth. I just like that, and then it's just like, yeah, that really makes me happy.
I'm glad to hear that. It was, you know, we've never actually, we've been at a lot of the same functions.
Yes.
We know 100 of the same people. We've never had a lengthy conversation. How did we,
I know, this is.
I don't know, because I think sometimes when you see people a lot and you think, what am I going to do, go up and just talk their ear off? Like, I don't know if they want to hear from me. You know,
well,
like,
now we're
and
doing
now,
it.
And now we've done it. And I so appreciate that we did.
We're both design fans.
I just think of you as such an inspirational artist. And it's been an absolute pleasure to have this conversation
you.
With you.
Thank you. And I'm glad to know you. And we live near each other.
Yeah,
so this is great.
So come over. And
we're going to be friends.
We got a pool. You bring the kids, you know.
You got an extra office here? I need a writing office.
Yeah. Come on, seriously.
All right. Thanks.
The end. Oh, and watch. Bless This Mess, which is on Tuesday nights on ABC.
Yeah, oh God, I should have led with that.
Okay. Too. Yeah.
Okay, good. ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.